This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Father's Day is coming. It's Sunday. It's our time. Us fathers, we get our moment. Little Chris was telling my lovely wife, his mother, he said, I know what Dad wants for Father's Day. It's peace. And Chris was right. He was half right. Part he left out was Denstals. You've got to bring me the turtlettes. I want peace, and I want my turtlettes from Denstals, and I've got a complete day on Sunday. That's how you take care of Dad properly. Give him the best chocolate in the world. It's made right here in Memphis. The summer sizzling special in full swing with Denstals cashew crunch, pecan brittle, peanut brittle, handmade in copper kettles with brown sugar and butter. Delicious trio. It's all wrapped together. Special price just in time for Father's Day. You can get over there this week. Get it for Dad in time. Try those turtlettes. They're made with crisp pecans, covered with fresh chewy caramel, then enrobed in Denstals rich milk chocolate. Made in only the way that Denstals can do it. If you've got a dad that's a sportsman, they've got chocolate-covered basketballs, chocolate-covered golf balls. If you've got a dad that's an outdoorsman, they've got the chocolate-covered ducks and chocolate-covered fish. So Denstals got it all ready to go, all for Dad. Make sure you're taking care of Dad. We took care of Mom a few weeks back. Make sure you're taking care of Dad as well. Go to Laurelwood, Germantown, Kyrieville, where they make the candy, Pleasant View, or downtown, any of those stores, and say thanks, Dad, with Denstals made in Memphis and enjoyed by the whole world.
Frank Bonner, 125. We'll talk to him about Memphis football. We have not caught up on Memphis football in a while, actually. Probably this will be the first time this year that we have talked about Memphis football with a guest. So we will get the latest with Frank and just sort of what the sentiments are over there with him at 125. So looking forward to that. But a couple of things. NFL minicamp is going on. It's mandatory minicamp. It's not the voluntary OTAs, but you still have players that are skipping minicamp. Kirk Cousins is one of them. I didn't even realize he was still a thing, but apparently he is. He wants to be a starting quarterback this year. Atlanta's saying, like, we're full steam ahead with Penix.
He's super disappointed that Pittsburgh went on ahead with the plan with Rodgers. That's where he was kind of slick hoping he might end up.
Yep. Now, Cousins has the Bradley Beal deal where he has a no-trade clause, so they can't just ship him anywhere because he will not agree to that. But I don't think anybody would trade for him unless they would bring him in as a starter, and that's what he wants. So I feel like he's at a point now where beggars can't really be choosers, but he is obviously he was not present for practice during voluntary OTAs. He does not expect he is not expected to be necessarily around for what's going on this week. And you know,
it still makes no sense why Atlanta gave him all that guaranteed money and then decide that you're going to draft Penix. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
He's in a situation. He's getting paid. Nobody's going to cry for him. Especially, I mean, $100 million, that's guaranteed.
27 and a half in 2025.
Nobody's going to cry for him. But it was ridiculous to bring him in at that number and then draft the quarterback where you did.
Well, they misevaluated somewhere because it feels like by the time they drafted Penix, they had realized we can't count on Kirk Cousins to be the guy we want him to be. I don't know what information they got or didn't get or whatever, but you're not drafting Michael Penix unless it's an urgent need at that spot. Right, and they must have gotten privy to that because Kirk looked terrible last year. I mean, obviously the injuries and all that, but yeah, I don't know. I don't where would he even be a consideration for right now? Now that Pittsburgh's off the table.
Well, if they were serious about winning, they're not. They're having to get past the Deshaun Watson era and paying them. It'd be a place like Cleveland.
Well, Cleveland makes sense.
Got five quarterbacks on the roster.
Right,
they're not serious about it right now. And that's why they've got two rookie quarterbacks, third and fifth round, and Dylan and Shadur.
Yep.
Because they're still paying so much money to Deshaun. So they can't mess with it. They would be a team, obviously.
Right.
But Pittsburgh was Kirk's hope.
I mean, New Orleans, right? In the division?
It would sort of bail out. Again, they drafted the kid from Louisville and spent him, you know, whatever pick that was, second rounder, whatever he ended up being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, spent some pretty good capital on him. They got Spencer Rattler, who you're not high on.
Right.
You saw enough of him to be honest with you last year.
Yep.
But they've got a high enough guy where, okay, let's see what we've got here.
Yep.
I don't know that it's a bad deal, but it's the money. It's are you going to pay that level of money?
Exactly.
Level of guaranteed money, especially if Atlanta's not paying a certain amount of it.
Yeah, there's really nowhere else for him to go. I mean, all these places have, you know, situations at starter. You know, I mean, he came from the Vikings, so he's not going back to Minnesota.
I would want an insurance plan if I'm them. My problem is, again, if I'm Minnesota, I'm not paying Kirk Cousins' tab. I would need Atlanta to, you know, take care of a big part of that bill.
Exactly.
But I think they are putting way too much in terms of eggs in the J.J. McCarthy basket. This guy was not a thrower at Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
He is a winner. I'm out. You know, he's handled everything beautifully. But to just go in there and expect this guy to all of a sudden be – you know, have a Sam Darnold type year, and that was an outlier year for Sam. I do believe, they're that good in offense. I believe those weapons, Jefferson. I believe they're that good of weapons. He's never shown us he's this thrower. He was a game manager. They had a running offense at Michigan. For him to just go in there, for folks to be expecting 14 wins again, I think you should have some insurance there after letting Darnold walk. Now maybe it doesn't look like Kirk Cousins, but I'd want something else there.
Well, I think that's the impasse, right? Is that, you know, you were saying that the other team that's trading for him would want Atlanta to eat it. Well, Atlanta would want the other team to eat it. So that's why you're at this impasse.
It was Atlanta's mistake to start with. They want somebody else to pay it. Nobody's going to step up to pay for their mistake. Guaranteeing Kirk Cousins that much money coming back from the injury he's coming back from.
And he's got a $10 million bonus in 26. Nobody's going to trade for this guy.
It's Atlanta's, you know, issue because they guarantee. I guess Blank doesn't care, Arthur Blank, because again, it's his, you know, it's his money. But and you still allowed your team, your front office, to convince you to take Penix their first round, even though you gave this dude, was it a $140 million deal and 100 of it's guaranteed? It's something like that.
Yeah.
Either way, it's
just
ridiculous front officing.
Yeah.
That money could have been used on defense. Last year, take Penix. That's what everybody's doing. Everybody takes the quarterback, but spend it on other play, and then maybe you've gotten good enough in some other areas where you have a contender in the freaking South.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that he's just going to rot, and he'll make the money, but he won't play unless Penix gets hurt.
He's a weird deal, man. He's made a ton of money in his career, but he'll go down as a guy who just was not a you know, couldn't put you over the top. Sure, but what. What was he a winner? He had good habits, but he never got you. He never got you over the top. So maybe some Dak in there.
Yep. Couple guys defensively who are holding out or skipping minicamp altogether. They're both seeking new deals, and they're in the same division. Trey Hendrickson there with Cincinnati.
Yes.
And led
the league.
And it feels like that is not imminent at all because it feels like the Bengals have spent all their money. They extended T. Higgins, gave him a brand new deal. And that's kind of where their money went. So he's holding out, looking for a new deal with Cincinnati. And then T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt is skipping minicamp with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He posted an Instagram picture to his story holding up a peace sign in a Steelers uniform. So, you know, I think he's probably looking at Myles Garrett. Got that brand new deal. He wants that same money because he feels like he's on that level. And I don't know, you know, where Pittsburgh's at on it. Feels like he's a very important player. I assume it gets done, but, you know, not without some temporary pain, I guess. But Hendrickson, I'm way less sure on.
Yeah, they didn't just pay they paid both the receivers. That's why they have no intention of paying Hendrickson.
Yep.
And Jamar, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's an interesting decision because that defense was the problem last year.
The defense was the problem, and the only thing that you have on that defense is the guy who led the league in sacks. So he can come to the table and want more because of his production last year.
Yep.
He outplayed his contract. That said, what, he's about to be 31, I think it is, 30 years old. That I understand, and especially after what you did this offseason to wrap up both receivers. Well, he said, no, we got to let this one, you know. You did the same thing with T. I mean, you went all the way to the end with him, to the point, and you feel like you have to do this with Hendrickson, but keep him. It's what you just said. They were a sorry defense with him leading the league in sacks at 17.5.
Yep.
You let this guy walk, or you trade him. You got nothing. You're telling Joe Burrow and Chase and T. Higgins, then y'all got to go out and score 100. You see, I mean, and that's how it was for them at points last season, where they couldn't get the other offense off the field.
Yep,
and would have to go out there and outscore them every week. So if you, I mean, if you let Hendrickson walk, or you know, he plays this all the way through and doesn't show up, I don't, that defense has nothing to stop anybody, and you're taking the chance for Burrow and Chase to even pay off for you. You can't get stops, it doesn't matter how many points those guys score.
Yeah,
that was the case for them last year.
I'm not sure what their plan is there at all.
Should have been made a way to pay all three. You were just going to have to do it. When once this kid was putting up 17.5 last year, you probably, and you saw Myles Garrett do what he did.
Yep.
You probably should have been setting aside the money. Apparently, they have the cap money to afford it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, even after the Chase and
they just don't want to pay the 30-year-old edge
rusher.
They just
don't want to give it to him.
Yeah,
but they've got it, and that's why he probably about right to, you know, stand to this one, hold him to it, and see if the, you know, see if it'll eventually shake.
I think he will absolutely be gone.
They don't have a choice.
They will. Somebody will trade for him at the end of the day. Like I'm reading right now, former NFL Network analyst and former Eagle scout Mark Ross says he thinks a second rounder would get it done for Trey Hendrickson.
I don't know why the Bears wouldn't jump on that right now.
Yeah,
especially and would give him the extension.
Because you got to pay him. I mean, that's why, you know.
They're in a deal where they're having to pay Burrow and the two receivers top dollar. They don't have any more. They don't want to pay anymore. They're stretched all the way to the cap if they pay Hendrickson.
Right.
Bears don't have a quarterback on a
exactly.
on an extension.
Now
they got him
the
on
time.
A rookie deal. Now
we,
is the time.
We talk about this all the time.
We said, and I've said it too. Sweat is more of a number two rusher. Yeah. You really, this guy come in. He is,
yes,
your number one. He makes Sweat better.
Yes.
You're paying your other positions like the 49ers,
yeah,
were doing
Commander,
when Brock
same,
Purdy
same,
was on his
boat, right, with Jaden Daniels.
Commander, same boat.
Yeah.
Like this is what everybody wanted to do after Russell Wilson, you know, does it with Seattle on that rookie deal. Now, if everybody's emulated it and nobody's come through.
Right. Right.
But this is what everybody is trying to do.
No, it is. And
maximizing, you got that quarterback on the rookie deal.
It's really
makes too much sense for Bears.
You know, even the Pats, right? I know it's not what they do, but like if it's Drake May, or you know, if you got a guy on a rookie deal at quarterback who you think will take a big step in year two and could be in the mix. Obviously the Commanders were already in the mix. They were in the NFC Championship game. We believe that with Ben Johnson, the Bears will look a lot better. They will be in the mix for the division on some level. Like this is when those teams are supposed to be aggressive. You know, I mean, it's backwards because you're like, well, don't you want to? No, you can't wait because if you ever.
Niners gave themselves a bunch of chances that just
they
didn't get through.
And they were right there.
Right,
I mean,
there, right there.
They
should have done
2 or 3 years where they were in the, you know.
Because of Purdy and getting him when they did.
But they, even though they didn't get the results, they played it. They played their hand the right way.
They did.
You know, so, you know, I think the Chiefs are kind of the rarity, right? And the Eagles are the rarity too.
The Eagles are rarity because you signed them early. You got them all signed up. Well, they were a little earlier to it than Cincinnati was. They played Higgins, did the franchise thing, let that get expensive. They pushed Chase all the way to the end. Whereas, I want to tell you, they got Devontae done early, and then AJ's paid too. Jalen's got all his.
Yeah.
Like Eagles are an outlier because everybody's done.
Exactly.
And all the rest of their good players, like a lot of the rest of them, are on rookie deals.
Yes.
Especially defensively.
Yes. I feel like there was a stat. Like, there was a stat that about
the Saquon, too. They paid Saquon, too. Like, Saquon's making good money.
The Eagles were the first team in the NFL salary cap era to win the Super Bowl with a quarterback earning $50 million, right? Like, that's the rarity with them. And then I do not think that will be the norm. I do not believe you're going to see every year a $50 million plus quarterback, unless the salary cap, like, 10 years from now, whatever. But, like, in the here and now, 50 million QBs, unless they're named Patrick Mahomes, and it's just like, you know, a rarity. Like, I don't think, you know, I know everybody likes the Bills. You know, they have roster deficiencies. We talk about it. Like, what's their defense? You know?
Well, and they got to get their running back once more money.
Yeah.
Back to that point.
Right. So, like, you know, sacrifices are made to pay the QB. That's the way it goes. And obviously, you'd rather have the quarterback, but there's going to come a time where the limitation shows up, the shortcoming shows up. And, you know, very few have been able to overcome it. It's Jalen Hurts this year and then Mahomes the year before, and that really kind of feels like about it. I guess Tom Brady and the Bucks, but
Brady
always took less.
He did. That's what helped them
build
the dynasty.
Yeah.
Because he would take less.
So, you know, Stafford with the Rams, I suppose, that was one example. He wasn't making 50, but he was obviously highly paid. They had Aaron Donald. They were one off. They went all in on the Super Bowl and they got it, and they haven't done anything really since, which is fine. I mean, they were in the playoffs last year, but They wanted to get that one ring. They got it. And now we'll see. Now we'll see where they go. I mean, a lot of people like them this year. But the key is strike while you don't have to pay that $50 million. You don't have to, you know, you can use that difference of about $40 million a year. Go pay Trey Hendrickson $15.8. Like, materially improve your defense while you have the chance. You know, and you're not, like, the Rams have Jared Verse. They're fine. They hit on him, right? They don't have to pay him.
Did you see Aaron Donald outwork that fool?
Yeah, he said he wanted the smoke, and he got it.
To be in that level of shape after
crazy
retirement.
No doubt.
Aaron Donald, maniac.
That was definitely the first thing I know. I was like, why would you not just get, like, super fat? Like, all you do is eat Buffalo Wild Wings all day? Like, but no, he is still – he's training like
what?
He's playing.
He's training like he's trying to get the world's strongest man. Is
yeah.
that, remember that old competition?
Yeah.
I don't know if it still is.
Yeah, it definitely feels like he's, you know, he's has not stopped working out at all.
Well, I told you about these veterans in Pittsburgh who resent the way that Mike Tomlin's kind of folding up here on this Aaron stuff.
Yeah.
JT's might, you know, it's money. Some of it is.
Yeah.
But some of it, telling you.
Yep.
Tomlin's voice isn't going to be heard as strongly. I'm eager to see. You hear our man Calvin Austin was doing a thing this morning. Brooke Pryor was reporting from it and said that one of the ladies there told him, I don't like that, told Calvin to his face, I don't like that Aaron Rodgers is here.
Oh, wow.
I hope they go to Mason Rudolph. Told that
why,
to why Calvin.
Why did Calvin Austin get dragged
told
into
that
it?
To Calvin at his event today.
Wow.
The fan themselves.
Oh, okay. And so it was an event. Okay. That,
yeah, yeah.
With fans.
I mean, they're all up there. Yeah, I think Calvin, Brooke Pryor was reporting on
it. Got it.
And it stood out because it's our man from Memphis. But, yes, he's you'd figure everybody up there is happy this is done. And that it's finally Aaron, they can kind of move on.
Mm-hmm.
But at least one, you know, at least one woman apparently told Calvin to his face.
Yeah, well, it's a big
doesn't
year for
want,
it's a big year
guy
for Calvin.
Around.
I'm glad. I mean, I think he's gonna with the real like we could say what we want about Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, he's an upgrade over whatever they had last year.
Well, I'll be honest. I was hoping Calvin be signed up already.
Yeah, and he's not. I think he
I
was
don't
hoping
like,
it too.
I don't like him going into the year
right
on the final year of the deal.
Yep.
I don't like them.
I agree.
Making him wait like that. He deserves more.
It's a big year for him, obviously.
But I get it. It's a business.
They want to see can he be a number two-ish receiver.
What was it? Four touchdowns? I think it was four touchdowns.
Yeah.
He's a great three, you know.
He's elite.
He's a great three.
But threes don't get lots of money.
Right.
You know, like you got to be a number two. Because a number three receiver is like probably among the most replaceable positions.
I'm trying to think of number three receivers that are on long-term deals that we hold up.
There really aren't any.
Well, because wasn't Lockett sort of that for Seattle? And he's out of there now.
He wasn't, though, to start.
He became that.
He became that. But he was
and,
a number
and
one.
And when he became that, though, they didn't keep paying it. They let him roll,
totally,
to your point. You
totally
don't do number threes,
you don't,
typically.
You don't.
On long-term deals. Maybe you did that with the Edelman days, but was he really a three?
I mean,
he was more like a two.
He was a slot.
Those guys
he was
were
like,
slots.
Yeah. He played the
caught,
three, but
you know, caught over 100 passes.
Exactly.
So they
and
weren't
he,
technically
Brady's
threes.
Favorite target.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So he was
even
not.
They were slots.
Exactly. So that's the thing is like he's gonna have to establish himself as that's fine. If you want to line up in the slot, that's fine. But it's like you're gonna have to show your.
There ain't many twos at his size.
I don't know
in
if
the
there
league,
are any.
5'8", 5'9".
I don't think there are any.
Love Calvin Depp. I don't know.
Like
maybe Tyreek Hill. You know, it ain't much
right.
taller than Calvin.
No, that's true.
There's a couple. They're a little speed burners.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. There just aren't. Like, Tutu Atwell, you know, like that.
The one that used to be in Indy, what was his name? A little guy used to go.
T.Y.
There it is.
T.Y.
He was smaller.
He was a number one for a minute.
He was a one.
Yeah.
He was a one. Yeah, they're not going to pay us like a two. They're not gonna pay Calvin like a.
And
team.
Honestly, like if it's like okay, you're a number three receiver, we'll just unless you know you become dispensable is all.
And I got too many. I got them coming in. I got Luther Burden trying to make the team, bro.
That's right.
So for my team, we don't have a spot.
I think we have a spot.
Raiders. That's where I was process of elimination. I was getting to your sorry squad.
Well, yeah, we got Jacoby Myers.
Calvin could pass him today.
We drafted the kid from Princeton, Tiger Beck. You know, we'll see.
Who?
Jack Beck, sorry. Tiger was unfortunately his brother who passed. Jack Beck. We got him. We drafted him from TCU in the second round. You know, again, is this the Hunter Renfrow thing? White receiver. Tough.
Was he a two and y'all overpaid? Or was he really a three and y'all paid him like a two? That deal he was on had y'all hamstrung for a minute, didn't it?
Who? Oh, Hunter Renfrow?
Renfrow. He was on a crazy deal, wasn't he? What we were just talking about, threes and twos?
Yeah, no, I think he was.
Didn't he get a deal as a?
Yeah, he got a contract. I don't think it was crazy.
Was it as a three?
It was like a
Two-three hybrid?
It was a two, yeah. It was 2 years, $32 million. So that was too much money, obviously.
Oh, Hunter made way too much.
Yeah. And, he was like literally working a regular job last year. He left the NFL in 2024 and was working like an insurance job or something, like a regular job, and now he's back with the Panthers. But he took a whole entire year off to work a real job. Now he's back. I don't know. Hell if I know.
Yeah, I guess you don't take it for granted as much. It gives you a new perspective on getting a chance to play the game.
But it is not the market is not exactly robust for
you got him and Thielen down there?
Yeah, man, we got Thielen.
And Bryce got all
no,
these.
No, we got Xavier Legette.
Okay.
We got him. And that's not a great receiving room. Oh no, they drafted Tet. They drafted my man from Arizona.
Gotta give Bryce something.
Yeah. So he'll have okay. So no, he might actually have some juice now.
Okay,
let's see how good Ted is. But if there's anybody that should take a step this year, it's Bryce. Man, he was right there. He got benched. He got humbled. He stayed humble.
He did. He handled that benching like a pro.
And he came back and was like a different player.
Yeah, he's a lot better.
So I'm hopeful that he could. I've always rooted for him, even back to his Alabama days. I just like the way how cool he is, how composed he stays.
Well, you should root for Caleb the way you root for him.
I haven't really gotten to know Caleb that well yet. I was impressed with how he answered
handled the
book stuff. I liked that. Yep. I was a fan of that. He didn't get defensive. He didn't try to deny it. He embraced it. He owned it.
And they were right to have those fears about the Chicago Bears and the handling of quarterbacks previously anyway.
Absolutely.
You can't blame Dad or Caleb for that.
Absolutely.
But like you said, handled like a pro.
You know, so I appreciated that accountability. So I continue to watch more of him and get to know more of him.
Yes.
You know, yeah.
May get your vote of confidence.
Very much so. He's trending in the right direction, I would say. Big year for him. Big year.
Great.
All right, we'll come back. Frank Bonner's going to join us. Speaking of big years, it's a big year for Ryan Silverfield and Memphis football. We'll get his thoughts on all that and more on the other side. Jason and John, how do you turn to FM, ESPN? Frank Bonner covers the Memphis football program for the Daily Memphian. They've obviously wrapped up spring camp and are getting ready for the season. He joins us now. Frank, before we get into Memphis football, thanks for being here, by the way.
No problem.
Have you taken the time and space that you needed to grieve the Mike Woodson firing at Indiana?
You know, see, I knew you were going to bring this up. And honestly, I don't know if grieve is the word because I'm conflicted. I've got mixed emotions about it. So I don't know if grieving is the appropriate word, right? He did some good things, right? But there were some embarrassing losses happened last year that just kind of like stay in the back of your mind. So, I mean, those losses kind of what did it for him.
A lot of people don't know this. I'm gonna peel back the curtain a little bit. Frank Bonner, proud Indiana Hoosier, and we would be doing some podcast work. I'd see him in the office during the Memphis basketball season, and you know, Frank. Kind of poked his chest out, you know. He's kind of like, Indiana basketball is a blue blood, and y'all over here arguing about Memphis losing South Florida, you know. And so I just wanted people to know that there is a hoop side to you, a proud hoop side. And so do you think that DeVries is – are you hopeful about the job he will do up there?
Yeah, and what I'll say about the hire there, I think it was a safe pick for IU because he was a guy whose name was getting thrown out there. So nobody's going to be jumping down your throat for hiring him, right? Like you knew that everybody was going to think that was a good hire. And so I do think it was, if you're trying to steer the ship, I think he's a good guy to go after because you think he's going to do, you know, a better job than some of the embarrassing losses that we saw last year. I would have liked, and this is probably the delusion of me, like some of these names I'm going to say I knew we couldn't get, but like part of me still feels like IU is a job that could have chased after a Rick Pitino, and that's just a delusional fan of me. But like, that's a guy who I would have loved to see be coaching IU that you just knew wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, it's a new era, and the Big East has all this. They don't have to share money with football, and Cignetti's going to want a lot. So I think that's got to be part of the equation as well. All right, let's talk Memphis football. You're talking to Memphis football coaches. You were around all spring. What are the vibes, man? How are the people involved feeling about this season with so much change, right? But also still so much talent for Memphis football.
Yeah, right. One thing I will say is they feel confident on paper. Like, if you talk to any one of the coaches, whether it's Silverfield or any one of the position coaches, they feel confident that they have gotten more athletic in terms of what they have on the roster. And, you know, Ryan had even said that he feels like this is the longest in terms of measurements and links, measurables, this is the longest that the defense has been in recent years. So they do feel confident in the measurables that they were able to put together for their roster. Now you just have to see if all that's going to come together and how many wins is that going to turn into. But on paper, they feel strongly about the roster they were able to recruit out of the portal and some of the returners they have. They don't have a lot of returners from last year, but they still got guys like Whitlow. They still got Courtland Marsh, who you didn't get to see much. And I think Courtland Marsh can be an all-conference caliber player. When he came back from that injury in those last four games, I mean, he was all over the field. So you still do have some pieces. And obviously the running back room is, you don't have a question mark there. So there's still some returners, but they've brought in a lot of transfers who they feel fit the mold of what they're trying to do.
I'm curious, Frank. I mean, a lot of times coming off a year like Memphis had last year where you're picked number one, you lose a guy like Seth Hennigan that you've had forever. Maybe the expectation, the pressure goes down a little bit, the pressure level. But we know that's not going to be the case here with Ryan having not won the conference title, having not made a conference title game. And we've heard Ed Scott say as much that, conference titles are the expectation here. I'm curious, as it relates to this season, the way you think this will play out in terms of the preseason media poll, John and I aren't expecting Memphis to be picked number one. Like they were last year, having Seth with the quarterback situation they've got. But what are you sort of expecting in terms of who will be one and how high Memphis should be in terms of in the mix?
Yeah, I don't anticipate Memphis. It looks like it's going to come out that Tulane is, my guess would be Tulane would be voted one. And then to your point about the expectation, the transfer portal has kind of changed that. Like the transfer portal, throwing that in, it's kind of giving you a world where you're expected to win now,
yep,
even if you did lose most of your roster from last year because of what you're able to get in the portal. This is not a year like last year where Memphis was overwhelmingly expected to finish number one with the roster that they had and the continuity and all that. But even with that, I don't anticipate that Memphis is going to drop down to being fifth or anything, right? They should still be voted as a top three because I think every year – looking at what's in the conference, looking at the resources that Memphis has, there's no reason why every year Memphis shouldn't be going into the preseason ranked as a top three team, even if they're not number one.
Yeah. So
couldn't agree more.
I'm curious, do you have a sort of initial understanding, because you're talking about NIL, and obviously Memphis football was positioned well with that even before, but do you have an initial understanding of just how – this house settlement will impact Memphis? Like, will they be better for it? Like, what's just sort of your initial read on how the new landscape will impact Memphis football?
Well, honestly, I think Memphis is it depends on which ring we're talking about, right? Because Memphis, because they recruit so well, they are able to kind of punch above their weight class in recruiting. I think they'll be fine when you're talking about other group of five or group of six conferences, however you want to say it, they'll be the top of the echelon there. But if you look at what Memphis is doing recruiting, they're competing against guys. I mean, you see they were able to get A.J. Hill. Like, they're getting guys that some of these power conference schools are chasing after. So when you look at that, when you look at them punching above their weight class, I do wonder if it's going to be harder for them to do that with the house settlement, because you're going to be going against power five conference schools who are they're going to be opting into the entire $20.5 million or whatever it is, while Memphis, is expected to be the top, if not one of the top group of fives. you're not expecting Memphis to opt into the entire 20.5, and then you also know how big basketball is here, so basketball's got to get its money. So I do think when they're trying to compete against those Power 5 schools, they may lose some guys that they may have gotten, you know, in previous years. That's just my guess as of right now.
In terms of Ryan, and we know, you know, Frank, you would know this better than me. Is it 28 or 29 he's signed up through now? I lose track because he adds the extra year with the rollover. But in terms of how long with a new AD, obviously, in Ed Scott, how long you are willing to, because it's layered. You're winning games. You've won 21. Nobody knows this better than you over the last 2 years. In bowl games, you're beating power conference teams. You can tell yourself this is success. There's also, there's a factor of this where, okay, well, attendance doesn't necessarily reflect what we've done. We certainly don't have the conference titles. And so I say all that to lay out for you, Frank, is like at what point – right now that we're past Seth Hennigan, is Ryan Silverfield held to a point, okay, conference title or bust? Because I just remember covering Josh Pastner, and after a while, year seven, well, Memphis was tied in contractually with him and actually was about to go on because it couldn't afford to get out of it before Georgia Tech swoops in, and boy, were they ready to move on. But the point was, well, he just hadn't done enough with the resources that he had. And I'm just wondering, at what point does the program potentially get there with Ryan Silverfield, considering, as everything you just laid out, the resources now, what he's got to win with?
Well, last year makes that conversation a lot more interesting, because last year still was an 11-2 season, right? The second most wins in program history. So you can't look at that and turn your nose up at that. But on the other side of it, that was supposed to come with a conference championship,
yes,
at least a conference, championship berth and playing in the game. But do you really look at the last 2 years and say you're going to move on from a guy who was what, 10-3 and then 11-2 in his last 2 years? That's a tough trigger to pull like that. And then you look at this year, if they don't win the conference this year, how much of that do you look at? Like, I think Brendan Lewis is going to be the starting quarterback. I think so. But let's say somehow A.J. Hill ends up winning the job and you don't win the conference tournament, or you don't win the conference championship with a freshman quarterback. How much flack do you give Ryan for that?
Right. I get it. You can't give him a ton for losing if he ends up with a freshman quarterback and he ends up not winning a conference. I get it. I get where you're at. You can't fire him and say this is a bad season.
But I would say, how do you recruit a quarterback that's not good enough to beat out a freshman? That puts you in a situation where you have to start the freshman. And then if you say, well, the freshman's awesome, well, if the freshman's awesome, then you should win. You know?
True.
I mean, I think it's all, you know, no matter what happens, it all comes back on Silverfield one way or the other if he doesn't perform.
Which is true, which is why I think Brendan Lewis is going to end up winning the job.
Right.
I would bet, short of injury, I'd bet everything I have on it. Like, I just don't think Silverfield's turning it over to a freshman in this particular year.
Well, it also, you have to weigh, right, Frank, at some point, what you're missing out on potentially by not winning these conference titles, right? Especially at a time where you've taken over Simmons Bank. You need that place as full as possible. And while I'm with you, I guess in a way, yeah, 21 wins. Well, on most Saturdays, most Thursdays, Fridays, those are wins. But if I'm not, you know, if attendance is not going up, And I'm not making, you know, competing with Boise State for the Group of Five spot in the CFP, am I getting everything I need out of that spot?
True, and I'll ask you this, and I think me and John kind of differ a little bit on this. Let's say Memphis did win on the road against UTSA like they should have, yep, and they find themselves in the championship, and let's say they win it. How much of an impact do we really think that would have had on the fan base? Me personally, I don't think much.
It's interesting.
If they get there and lose, like what was the stipulation?
Whether they get there and lose or they get there and win, I think the problem with the fan base is is a little bit more deeper than winning the conference championship.
Well, that's interesting, and I think you're fair to bring it up. My point would be now it gets you right in the running at least, and it wouldn't have done it last year. Boise State would have been in.
Exactly.
But it puts you in a new grouping that's a college football playoff spot, right? So there's a new hope that comes with winning your conference title. That doesn't necessarily mean you're not there every year, Frank. I'm with you. Maybe most years Mount West Boise State's getting it. But you're in the running, right? And that's what it gives you a new hope, something to pull for, right? National.
To your point, like if they were in, like you said, like if they won the championship last year, they still would have been on the outside looking in the college football playoff.
No question.
But if it gets them into the college football playoff, then yes, I can see the uptick in the fandom. But I'm just not sure, because when the team was winning and it looked like they were headed toward a possible conference championship, the fans weren't coming out in droves then.
I don't know. I think it would make a great deal of difference if Memphis gets to the conference championship and wins it, obviously.
To his point, though, I wonder, to Frank, on your point, when it did look good, if that's folks, you know, some not believing in the coach that they've got, you know, just in the time that he's been there.
Well, when did it look good, though? When has it looked good in the context of competing for an AAC? Like, it hasn't.
Well, until they lost to UTSA last year, right, Frank? I mean, you only had the one loss. It was early to Navy, but it was
winning.
Just the one.
That was the problem, is that they didn't even give you any hope because they just kept beating everybody's ass all year.
Yeah, but the Navy did end up losing to, what was it, Rice? Which
right.
Would have given,
yeah, no, but that was after you lost to UTSA, so all hope was gone anyway.
Saying, it wasn't gone until, I mean, UTSA is what killed it.
Yeah, UTSA took you out totally. But, I mean, your win got taken out of the sails. It was, what, fourth game of the season? I mean, and you were a 9-point favorite, whatever it ended up being. You know, maybe it was more. I don't know. I think that the fan base would be totally happy with the coupling of that having never happened and you being the top spender, top resource, top everything, pick to win, you finish fourth, two sub-500 years in the American. I mean, that, you know, it's not been good.
I don't think you're wrong, though, Frank, that maybe sometimes we overestimate it, because I once thought if you put a ranked team from start to finish down at FedEx Forum, you would have 12,000, 15,000, no problem, you know, on most nights. That didn't happen last season. I do think, though, it's kind of like with the NCAA tournament and the Tigers as far as the college football playoff. If you're winning the AAC title, at least in football, it's giving you a shot at the big dance.
Well, I mean,
maybe most years you're not getting it because Boise State's done better in the non-con. But that hope, right, for a national championship that you've never been able to sell here.
No.
You can't, because you can't win it.
No, of course.
Never been in recruiting or anything. That little bit of hope gives you a little something.
But I guess, like, let's recalibrate this entirely, Frank. Like, what should the expectations for Memphis football in the current iteration era be? What should they be? What should the expectations on an annual basis be for Memphis football?
We should be Boise State, right, Frank?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all in agreement on that, right? The expectation should be conference championship, you know, every year.
Every year.
Now, it's not to say that every year you're going to be in it, but every season the expectation should be that you're good enough to win the league. And every other year, or however you want to say it, like, you know, frequently enough, you should be either in the game or winning the game to be up there, like you said, with the Boise States of the world and being that representative for the group of five or group of six or whatever for the college football playoff. I mean, that I think we're all in agreement that that is – where the standard for Memphis football should be.
Right. And so the point, okay, we agree they're perfect. This is a great starting point.
Yep.
So we agree that's the standard. They have fallen short of that standard every single year under Silverfield.
Every
single year. They've never even been in the championship game, and they finished two seasons under 500. So if we are consistently falling short of the standard, then what do we do? Do we just say, oh, that's the standard, you're not meeting it, we'll just keep we'll keep trying and hope that you hit it one day? Or do you say, hey, even though this isn't a disaster, we have to make a change because it's not meeting our standard? That's because you ask, like, what do you do?
This is the coach. This is the point. This,
you know,
is the
Memphis, Memphis is an athletic department that fired Tubby Smith, Hall of Fame coach, right? Hall of Famer, won a national championship, one of the best ever. And they did it because, not because it was a disaster on the court, they did it because they knew that they could not proceed with him as the coach. Fans were tuned out, they were checked out, and they were finishing fourth, fifth in the league, and they had to make a change. I am of the mind that if you can fire Tubby Smith, you can certainly fire Ryan Silverfield if he's not performing at the level that he needs to be.
Yeah, right. And so, there, like you said, there does become a breaking point where you look and say, hey, you've been a coach for this many years.
Right.
You haven't been in the game. I'm just saying, as we're having this conversation right now, is right now necessarily the time to have that after the last 2 years. And I know it didn't become a conference championship, but that's a, like, my point is that's a tough trigger to pull.
It is. It makes, like, for a program like Memphis football that doesn't have the history of Memphis basketball, right? Memphis basketball was an easy sell, super easy to the community, because it's like, we got to do better than six in the AAC. We got to do better than 5,000 people announced. Like, we got to do better than that, right? Memphis football has not ever been in a situation where they're winning 9-10 games a season like they have the last two, or 11 or whatever. But it's also a situation where it's like the money has also never been this much for them. Mm-hmm. The resources have never been this good. The investment mm-hmm. has never been this high. So you almost have to, like, you have to catch up. So it's like if the investment is flush and the resources are great, but the results are eh, which they are, they're eh. That's how I think you do it. It's weird. I don't know what the precedent is for it. Like, I don't know, like, what other situation I would compare it to, Frank. Like, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of them around the country, you know, where the expectations have changed so rapidly, you know, on the fly for a program.
But if it was going so well, right, Frank, if it was such success, he would be on coaching candidate lists and he would be coveted by other programs, right?
Well, yeah, last year was the year. Last year was the year to get that conference championship crown, and in this conversation, yep, is mute because you have what the, you know, you have the coveted, you know, trophy. My main pushback on this conversation, though, is if you do that, who the heck do you think is going to come?
That's fair. That's a fair, because you're
somebody that says I can go win an AAC championship there and be in the running for the college football playoff and go get a job from there, right? And somebody that's competitive. Some Rawl at Tulane, a guy like him that says, I can go there and be there for two or three seasons and then I'm out. I'm going to go flip it into a power job. And somebody competitive, somebody says, that looks at it for what it is right now, a resourced, best resource program outside the power structure, you could argue. Certainly right
yeah,
there at the top.
That's a big gamble to take because you also it don't is. Know if your recruiting is going to remain the same.
Understood.
One thing that you can say about Ryan is that he recruits.
He does.
You don't know if the next guy is going to do that. And so we're talking about the resources and the talent that he has. Are you 100% sure that the next guy is going to have the talent that he has?
I watched the two previous guys with less go get bigger jobs, right, because of what they turned it into. And what I could argue is Ryan isn't – he's pulling a Josh Pastner where he's recruiting so well – frankly, he's not performing at a high enough level for how he's recruited. So, and I could point to, okay, well, maybe we get past Ryan, you get another Fuente and Norvell in here that with these resources is actually hitting on it. Sure, maybe the recruiting goes down a level, but he's turning it into a more, you know, an outfit that's executing at a higher level and you're winning championships. I could argue it that way.
I mean, that's valid. I think the point is that at some point a conference championship has to emerge, right?
100%.
I think, yeah, it has to emerge, and if it doesn't, then, you know, other conversations may have to be had that were had a couple years ago or whatever. Yeah. But right now, I think you see if he can do it.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about
that's
that.
Where you are right now.
But it's a good conversation. There's no doubt we will have it again.
Great stuff, Frank.
Frank, thank you for stepping into the box here. You're the man. See you soon.
All right, y'all take care. Anytime.
Yes, sir.
He is Frank Bonner. Covers the Tiger football program for the Daily Memphian. You know, that's not a great position to be in, right, for him in terms of having to argue the other side, because it's not. But I do think
I think he gets it. We're all in the same spot.
No doubt. The most compelling one is the sell to the next. Like, it is going to be, you know, firing a coach.
How do you fire a coach
wins.
Who won 21 games over 2 years?
That's going to be.
Maybe it's 30 by the time you get there.
Exactly. I mean, yeah.
Because you say it's a new standard here. It's a standard of winning conference championships. He wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
And this is putting your money where your mouth is.
No, 100%.
If you're paying the buyout to raise the standard. Boise State, we've said, they do that. Avalos didn't meet it.
Yep.
1 year. That's all it took. After a 10-win season, they out.
Yep.
That's 5 wins. A little easier to do optically, but at some point, you got to go, man.
Absolutely. All right. We'll come back, wrap this up on a Tuesday. Jason and John, I just heard of him. Yes.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
We talk a lot about AI and how fast the future is approaching, and it's already happening in terms of replacing humans. Yahoo Fantasy, I don't know if you saw this. I'm not super familiar with the writers, but they've been there for a long time. Andy Behrens and Dalton Deldon, or Del Don, they have both been at Yahoo for a long time, for a very long time, doing fantasy sports, doing fantasy football. And over the past couple weeks, both of them were laid off by Yahoo. And today, Yahoo Sports has published an article titled, "Why Jameson Williams is No Longer a Boomer Bust Fantasy Football Option in 2025. And the article, they say at the beginning of it, in italics, in parentheses, was written by an AI tool called Cast Magic and reviewed by our editorial team to ensure accuracy. Please reach out to us if you notice any mistakes." So AI is here. It's replacing humans already in the workforce. And it feels like this will only be, this is like the scratching of the surface, right? Like, I don't know how it replaces your electrician or whatever the case may be, but in terms of, you know, your media, movies, commercials, things like that, it feels like the future is here. I don't like this. As a creative, I don't like this. You know, I joke about it on radio, but there was a story from Australia where there was a radio host, quote unquote, who was an AI for 6 months. Then nobody noticed. Nobody knew the difference. So I don't know. I wish we could get this thing kind of under control. I understand that efficiency is something that all companies try to strive for, and it's part of the deal. But man, AI replacing human beings and writing fantasy football articles was not what I thought this was going to be so soon.
Well, I mean, it can't cut ahead. It can't say how it felt during the game like you do during your show 5 days a week. It can't tell me, you know, there's human things, bro.
There are human things.
That aren't going away. This is the same, a similar conversation was made about robots. And yes, some jobs will go away, like your Yahoo writers. I'm not dismissing that.
Yeah.
We'll deal with it, man. We're going to evolve. There's no question about it. And I'm sure many old people before us didn't like phones and technology and all that stuff and sounded similar to this.
Those guys
must educate.
Those guys should go start their own fantasy website is what they should do. I mean, they should start their opinions, their whatever. If they're good at it and people like follow them for it, they should just go start there. Because I tell you, I would imagine there are a lot of people that are going to say, I'm not using Yahoo because they use AI. They replaced humans with AI. There will be a revolution in that way. We're at the beginning stages of it, but I that's what I would tell Andy and Dalton to do. But man, the future is now. Thanks to Frank Bonner for joining us on the show. Thanks to Jessica Benson as well. Jeffrey and company up next. Don't miss it. For Jason, I'm John. We're gone.